Hey, this is Rob Unspach, and welcome back to another edition of eHeroes. For those keeping count, this is episode 394. And my next guest, great evolution story. I think everybody's going to enjoy it. And but we're also going to touch on the $1 million standard, because I think that's what a lot of entrepreneurs shoot for. You know, yes, it's sometimes easy to make $100,000, $200,000 with that new standard. $1 million. I mean, that's success. So my next guest is Jody Sodini, and welcome and thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to your listeners.
You know, we talked off air a little bit about entrepreneur evolution, and a lot of my listeners know that I owned a carpet cleaning business before starting Unspach Media. And ran that for 19 years, but overlapped it with my consulting business, and my consulting business just turned 25 years old. But, you know, for you, the evolution, you started out as a firefighter.
A paramedic and firefighter, yep. Yeah. So I took a gap year after high school, and then I actually started in college to go for occupational therapy, and I was at the end of my first year getting ready to pick my classes for year two and fill in the gaps a little bit. And I remember like walking around the campus and with my advisor, and I saw the EMT class outside, like extricating someone from a car. And I was like, what's happening there? Who are those people? And she's like, that's the EMT class. Like, those people are weird. And I was like, I think those are my people. I'm like, I knew I didn't want like a typical like 9-to-5 sit at a desk type of job. So the occupational therapy was, you know, a good opportunity for that. But the, I also am an adrenaline junkie. And so I was like, you know, I want to look into this a little bit. Tell me more about this program. And she's like, oh, I don't know. I think you're making a mistake. Like, she really tried to steer me away from it. But I talked to the team of instructors, and I just felt this instant feeling of like, these are my people. Mm-hmm. This is what I want to do. So I signed up for those classes, and 9/11 happened. And my parents were like, you're not doing that. And I was like, oh, you can't stop me. So I went forward with it. And I graduated number two in my class, which was incredible, because that gave me an instant, like immediate opportunity for a job at the local ambulance company that I had already done all of my internships with. I had already been working part-time, but it was a full-time position just ready for me because of my performance in school. So I worked as a paramedic for 13 years. So I finished my EMT, did my paramedic, and then I was a single mom and having, we did what was called a Kelly shift or Kelly schedule. So I worked basically 10 24-hour shifts a month. So I had a lot of extra time, which is crazy. And so I went to Fire Academy, and I was, I was absolutely in love with adding more to my skill set. And again, the adrenaline rush of everything. Like, I learned how to rappel off a building. I learned how to like jump out a window and like you hook your arm on the ladder and flip out. Like, crazy things, using, you know, saws and, you know, small engine type tools. Operating the trucks with the, you know, all the tankers and making sure you pull the right button and push the right lever and all of that. So it was a whole nother level that I had no idea. Understanding, you know, fires and types of fuels and the right kinds of extinguishers and things like that. I like I said, a whole nother level. And was a supervisor on the ambulance company. And then I just maintained like regular firefighter status on the fire side. I had a really great leadership team there with an amazing sergeant and lieutenants, and enjoyed that a lot. I developed rheumatoid arthritis though at 30 years old, and then had a shoulder injury and a knee injury, and it just they were stacking up. The things were stacking up to where I wasn't performing well. I was hurting. And that last knee injury is kind of what took me out. So from there, I kind of dabbled here and there. I delivered for FedEx for a while. I got into commercial insurance. So I got licensed as an insurance agent here in the state of Michigan and did that for a while. And that was where I learned marketing and sales. I developed my boss had developed the Michigan Restaurant and Bar Insurance Program, which is just literally a fancy title to like stand out, right? And it's a good marketing title. So I developed like the Michigan like salons and spas insurance program, and I specifically targeted a niche or like tattoo shops, right? Because I've got a lot of ink. So I can walk in there in my suit, but also my ink showing, and they're like, whoa, you sell insurance. And so I could connect with them. But it was literally marketing and sales and the iteration of asking and asking and asking and being told no, 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 till you finally get that yes, and then you get a big contract. Mm-hmm. So that I honestly just a couple weeks ago reached out to my former boss and thanked him because I was like, do you know what that did for me? It really unlocked that level of like, I know that I can't get a yes if I don't ask, mm-hmm. and not being afraid to ask. So that was kind of that journey. And then I went and worked as a virtual assistant at a local brick and mortar firm for a little while. And again, it unlocked a possibility for me. Mm-hmm. I had had another baby. I was dreading bringing him to daycare all of the time. And it was not the life I wanted. I wanted to be a present mom. I wanted to be around. And so I got fired. long story, but he said, I don't really want to let you go. And I feel that you're really valuable and you're really good at all of this. Did you know that people do this from home? Like you could start your own business and do this. And he's like, I believe that you're the kind of person that actually can be successful at this. So I went home and within 2 days, I came up with, okay, I'm going to do this. Within 2 weeks, I had launched my own website. We didn't have vibe coding back then, so it took me a little bit to build a website. Mm-hmm. Within 2 months, I had replaced that income. Mm-hmm. I had replaced it with my own clients working on my own time during naps, during bedtime, things like that. I'd, you know, spend time with the kids and then I'd work in between. I know a lot of moms that have done that and dads too. And within 2 years, my then husband didn't even have to work anymore. I had replaced his income too. And so I continued on that path and scaled up and decided to focus on marketing in particular, because I had a huge love for that with all the data and the KPIs and letting the marketing tell me a story and then deciding what to do from there. And so I never started this with the intention of being where I am today. But once I realized what was possible, I decided that I wanted to be where I am today. And I decided I needed to be a different version of myself, a better version of myself in order to hold the kind of business that I wanted to have. And so all of that to say, that is what I call the $1 million standard, is that if you want to have a $1 million business, you have to decide that you need to be a different version of yourself in order to hold a business of that size. The person I am as a seven-figure earner is different than the person I was saying, I just want to replace my income, right? It's two totally different people. And so that's my podcast is called the $1 million Standard. And that's a lot of what I talk about is leadership and personal development and growth. Because we really do need to hold ourselves to a higher standard if we're going to hold a $1 million company.
Well, let's talk about personal development, because, you know, I looked at some of your pictures back when you were doing firefighting to when, you know, now. And you're a completely different person.
I am a completely different person. Absolutely. I was not, and this is so horrible, I was not taking care of my body. I would go to the gym sometimes, but I didn't really have a goal. I think I just wanted to feel good. I wanted to be able to do my job, but I wasn't fueling myself properly. I remember driving through Arby's drive-through in the ambulance and grabbing food, getting a call and like eating jalapeno poppers on the way to a cardiac arrest. Like, what?
Well, I just stopped at Arby's a while back. I think we have one in our local area.
Yeah.
And I walk in. And two of the cash register, the people at the cash register are both sitting on a chair and they're about 400 pounds.
Because they can't even stand.
And I'm thinking, do I really want to eat this food if that's what it's creating? And I walked out. I'm like, no.
Good for you. Good for you.
And I'm not saying Chick-fil-A is any better, but the people are at least thinner.
it's slightly less bad, I think. I don't know. There's still... Interesting fact, I actually went 5 years without eating any restaurant food. I was so sick of feeling sick and not knowing what was in my food. It helped that a good part of that was during COVID. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a habit. It was a habit of I'm not ordering takeout. I'm not going through a drive-through. My kids have literally never had McDonald's or Burger King or Taco Bell. That we just don't eat that way. We do eat Chick-fil-A though. So
it's my go-to.
I get the grilled nuggets and a kale salad and I'm like, okay, it's okay. I pray over it and it's fine.
And then you go through withdrawals on Sunday when they're not open.
Right, for sure. I'm like, what are we eating? It's late. We should just do Chick-fil-A. I'm like, crap, it's Sunday. But honestly, like I was not fueling my body well. The 24-hour shifts, not planning ahead and then grabbing to-go food and drinking Mountain Dew. I was addicted to Monster. I was smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. I'm a completely different person than I was back then. I didn't have a higher purpose. Mm-hmm. I was going in and doing the job that I loved, yes, but I wasn't serving at that level of this higher purpose that I have now, which is to lead well, to show up well for my family. Like I hadn't identified that in myself yet. And so, yes, I am a completely different person.
And, you know, and the thing is you never left firefighting. You still love it, but now you're putting out fires for people's marketing. For their, you know, all their other
stuff.
You know, it's for me, it's the same thing. You know, it's, you know, I never left cleaning. I'm still cleaning up other people's marketing, their publishing, their editing, whatever. It's like, oh, you know, it's.
Yep. Absolutely.
And the thing is, had I not owned a cleaning business, I would not be who I am today. Same with you. If you had not been that firefighter, if you have not done all those things, it would have not created who you are now.
Absolutely. 100%. And I mean, I don't think it's talked about enough. Maybe it is, and I'm just not a part of those circles anymore, but the mental health impact of the scenes that I was on, the patients that I cared for, some of the images that are forever etched in my mind, houses that I can't even drive past, like I can't, or like I'll hold my breath going around, you know, a certain corner or something like that, because I've just seen some horrific things. And I think that just really developed a really deep empathy, to where I operate from that place of like, I really care about other people and how they feel, and how I make them feel. And that actually made me a really good paramedic because I know people knew that I cared. It wasn't just that rote, like, you know, let me put the bandage on, let me start the IV, let me do the thing. It was, I cared and I would talk to them and I would, even if they were unresponsive, I would let them know like, hey, this is what we're doing and we're here, we're helping you, we're going to take care of you, we're going to get you to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it absolutely does impact me.
But, you know, it's like, you know, when you go on an airplane, the first thing they tell you to do in case of an emergency, the air is going to come down and you're supposed to put it on your face first before helping someone else. You've been helping so many people for so long that you neglected yourself.
I did. I did, for sure. I did. I was so worried about everybody else for sure. And I struggle with that to this day. Like, I'm just on the back end of this is news flash. I haven't really shared all of this publicly, but I'm on the back end of a divorce after a 16-year marriage. Like literally 2 weeks ago, you know, finished trial. Like, I wanted to go through that. I did not. but finished trial for this divorce. And I'm finally at the place where I'm like, well, I have been at that place of like, I need to pour back into myself. And that's probably, you know, the most recent year where I have dedicated to going to the gym, you know, 6 days a week and hiring a coach to dial in my macros. And I did like a whole photo shoot in the gym. Like, who is that girl? Because that was not me 10 years ago. So yeah, being able to put my own oxygen mask on and creating boundaries around how I show up for other people and how I let them impact my energy and my time. Huge. Yeah. One huge of the things thing that you just, I learned in the last year.
One of the things that you just posted, and I have to agree wholeheartedly because I went through this whole thing myself, and you both basically put it out there to the world. I'm officially building out, you know, and you put your wedding and event singing and all this other stuff, but you also put down that, I think below it, I'm shutting it all down. And it was not about your business, not about the mission, not about how you've been doing things, but it's about what you'll no longer accept from clients. And that was the biggest thing for me years ago. You know, when I started this, a lot of the people that I knew were carpet cleaners. Mm-hmm. And it was the industry that started me out. The problem was, is that most of these cleaners didn't have money. And maybe it's the industry. Maybe it's just the fact that they've pumped all their money into machines and chemicals and this and that and everything. There's no money for marketing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, do I want to continue to serve them? And I still write articles for a cleaning magazine today. But mm-hmm. it's, you know, unless you have, you know, multiple employees, they're spending gobs of money on marketing, I cannot help the single owner operator anymore because there's no money. Right. They have no budget. And so a lot of the clients I started taking on were lawyers and doctors, and they had so much disposable money that it was like, wow, this is just so much easier to deal with.
Yeah. The biggest thing for me was a misalignment in values.
Mm-hmm.
I've had this happen too many times in my company where I've had someone want to work with me and I see signs that our values are not matched.
Right.
But I ignore them because I want to help them and I genuinely see that there's a path for me to take them from where they are now to where they want to be. Like, I know exactly how to get them there and I can do that. And I still could do that. But mm-hmm. because we have a value mismatch,
mm-hmm.
that process is interrupted by them standing in their values, which are very contradictory to my values and contradictory to the contract that we have signed.
Right. And I want the audience to understand that your values over time can change.
Yeah.
You know, the things that you think are important now may not be important in 5 years. But I want you to understand that if you stick to those values, whether they evolve or not, you're going to have a better, more productive business.
Yeah, for sure. I'm so justice driven and I'm very like I didn't go into my entire journey, but I have had a period of 28 days where I was homeless, where all I had left was my integrity. And my integrity is what got me an opportunity to move into a place without a deposit. And the guy just trusted me because I had integrity. I was forward. I was honest. I was transparent about my situation, what had happened, why I got there, and how I'm moving forward. Mm-hmm. And so with integrity and like justice, when I feel wronged, it's so easy for me to be like, how could you operate that way? How could you treat me like that? How could you just skip out on, like, just say, hey, I'm not paying you tomorrow, even though our, you know, our invoice is due, I'm done. Mm-hmm. How could you do that? Like, I can't wrap my head around that. Mm-hmm. But there are people that's how they operate. And,
you know, and one of the things for me, though, was invoicing. That was the toughest thing because, you know, people tell you, oh, you send an invoice and then you wait 30 days to get paid. So I'm not waiting 30 days. I'm not even going to wait 10 days. I'm going to send you the invoice. You pay it. We get started.
Right.
You know, and that's how I do business. I get paid up front, and people are like, nobody does that, Rob. Well, I'm doing it because I'm not a bank.
Right.
You know, and it took a while to train people, to train my clients. But if you want to do business with me, these are my terms. These are my conditions. This is what I expect. And I think entrepreneurs forget that. They think, oh, everybody else is doing it this way, so I'll do it that way too. And then you get burned and you get burned out. And just, you know, I don't want to do things that way.
I'm pretty stinking burned out, honestly. There's just, I don't know. It's crazy.
You know, you have been through a lot, and I have to commend you for all the things that you've overcome. You know, it's not easy, especially when you get to a point in your business where you're like, you know, now's the time I take that next step. You know, and I could have given up this business a long time ago. You know, 25 years is a long time. 19 in the prior business is a long time. And the reason I got out of the cleaning business is like you. I couldn't do it anymore. It's hard work. My kids didn't want to do it. And when I sold the business, the guy who bought it tanked it within 6 months because he didn't understand the marketing. He didn't understand the pricing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's driving a lot of entrepreneurs right now out of business is they don't understand pricing. They don't ask for what they need to keep themselves in business.
Yeah, for sure. I've been through that too, where when I restarted my company, so again, a piece of my story is I grew my own company and then I hired a coach and then she brought me in as a business partner. Cause she said, I want to hit 7 figures. I haven't been able to do it. And so we together hit 7 figures and had a handful of years at 7 figures. And, it was during COVID that I left that partnership, and then went to, work as a CMO for another marketing agency for a year. And then I got restarted again in my own ads agency, just doing Facebook ads, just for the right people. Mm-hmm. And then I was brought on as a fractional CMO for someone else. So it was like when I restarted, I had that pricing objection in my own head of like, who am I now? I'm just me. And I'm just going to charge $2,500 a month for these ads, like no big deal. And then I realized I was getting baller results for this client and she was sending me referrals and I'm like, these are big names. Surely they can afford more than 2,500 and surely what I'm providing for them is worth more than 2,500. They've been trying to get this done in this way and scale their revenue. How much value is that I'm bringing? And so I went up to 3,000 to 3,500 to 4,000 and that was an evolution of my own mindset and my own realization of what value I bring to the clients, not what are they willing to pay me, but how can I position this as here's what I'm going to bring you. Here's the value I'm going to bring you. Do you see that? Like if we can agree on a price, do you see the value that I'm going to bring you? Yes. Well, then price is not an objection at that point because I've sold them on the value.
Right. I stopped asking people what their budget was because one, most people don't know what their budget is or they lie or, you know, they think, oh, well, they're only spending X, so I'll spend X. Mm-hmm. Look, I can't work within your budget. I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, this is my price. If you can find a way to afford me, great. If you can't, yeah. I'll move on to somebody who can. And right. that mindset made it so much easier to start saying no to people that couldn't afford me.
Yeah. I can't even tell you how many times I've been like, oh, I really want to help you. Okay, maybe I'll just do it for cheaper because I know I can help you and I know you don't have the money. And I'm like, that never ends well. Mm-hmm. It never ends well. It mm-hmm. always ends because they have that scarcity mindset. They have very low risk tolerance. And so, you know, our budget then for testing ads and iterating and scaling and stuff, it's like, well, I need to see this evolve over 90 days. I'm like, I get it, but like, I need you to have a bigger budget. So go sell something.
Yeah. And you know, the first 90 days as a client, I make them pay the whole 90 days up front. And a lot of people are like, well, Rob, why do you do that? That's a lot of money. Because like you said, they expect miracles within the first 90 days. And mm-hmm. and sometimes they expect a turnaround within 30 days. Oh, here I am building out their foundation. And after 30 days, they're like, well, I'm not going to pay you anymore because I'm not seeing the results. And then they disappear. You've already put in all that time and energy.
Yep.
Look, I you want to leave after 90 days, fine. Thing. But yeah, you're paying me.
Yep, for sure.
So let's for talk sure. about your podcast because, you know, this podcast started in 2018 and, you know, I was doing weekly episodes, and up until about episode 33, I stopped because I thought nobody was listening. Mm. And so there was a 6-month gap, and somebody said, hey, Rob, did you quit your podcast? And I'm like, well, I put it on hold. And yeah. so more and more people started reaching out. And I'm like, well, okay, I got to get this podcast going again. And so I did. And I made some changes, so I was batch recording and not having to do one at a time. And so now we're up almost 400 episodes. And
that's incredible. Honestly, that's amazing. I started my podcast I called it the Million Dollar Marketing Podcast. That was, I started my business just as Cedini Marketing, my last name. And then when I realized I was like, nah, that's not really a scalable, like, I don't want to be the identity. I want it tied to more of an outcome. And so I changed my company name to Million Dollar Marketing. And I started out solo episodes. Every once in a while I would have a guest on. And then I jumped into Josh Forty's Golden Mic Method program. And he teaches podcasts, like using podcasts as a different kind of tool. So essentially bringing guests onto your podcast that are an ideal fit for you as a client, and you align on your standards. So, and you align on personality and you align on credibility and things like that to where, you know, but you also weave in what you're good at and what you do. So when they think of marketing, they think of me. So I've brought people on, and even like people pitch themselves to be on my podcast all the time. And I will vet them and see, like, is this someone who could hire me? Because if they are, I will have them on. Mm-hmm. And that has happened. Like I got a cold pitch for a guest on my podcast, had him on the show, and he has since hired me. Mm-hmm. Because we established a connection there. We aligned on values and he needed marketing help and that's what I do. So he immediately thought of me. So that's been my strategy for probably the last year, is bringing on guests that do that. I'll do a little mini series here and there of just solo episodes. But I'm under 100 episodes right now. I've inconsistently done weekly episodes. I'll go stretches and then kind of fall off a little bit, but I really do love doing it. It's just, oh, I'm in a season. Well, you know, I'm in a season. Go ahead.
I have a lot of people that'll say, Rob, why do you bring on other marketers to your podcast? Don't you do the same thing? I say, well, I do sometimes certain things that are like,
yeah. But
you know, you talked about alignment. I'm not always in alignment with people. I'm very mm-hmm. sarcastic. I'm very upfront. I'm very bold. Some people don't like that. And yeah. so they can reference people that I've interviewed on my podcast and say, well, you know, Jody could be a good fit, or this person could be a good fit. You know, they're not as sarcastic as you, Rob. So I'm always grateful for people coming in and being a guest because their stories are different. You know, the way they do things are different. And so maybe I can't help everyone. And I don't really want to help everyone.
No.
Maybe somebody that's appeared on my podcast can help them.
Yeah. I've had people on my podcast before too that are competitors. We do similar things. And just because I needed a guest and I wanted to be consistent in like putting out episodes. My most notable guest was the one and only Dan Henry. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know Dan. He's the reason my podcast got flagged as explicit on iTunes. If you're watching this and you want to go check out that episode, you can go look at it. It's actually a really good episode. I dove into some things, and he actually shared some stories on that podcast that he hasn't shared anywhere else. I kind of got to peek behind the curtain a little bit. I was in his mastermind for 2 years when he was still in Florida. So, you know, we were kind of friends and then ran into each other at Funnel Hacking Live. What was it? February of 2025. And he agreed to come on my show and I held him to it. I was like, you are doing this. And then we got to chatting back and forth and he's like, hey, I'm getting ready to launch this funnel. What do you think of this headline? And I'll be like, it's garbage. Test this. And he's like, oh, that's actually really good. And so it's fun. I have a fun friendship with Dan that I respect him so much as a mentor in the business sense. I will say that.
Yeah, I've had some questionable people on my podcast. But the thing is that, you know, people will reach out and they'll say, Rob, that person that you just interviewed, despicable. Why'd you have him on there? Or that person ripped me off. Look, I interview people because I think they're marketing, they have a marketing style, or they're eclectic, or they have some type of story that might be interesting to somebody. You know, I don't always have time to deep dive everybody.
Right. And find out who wronged who
and I'm not going to go back and block that podcast from being listened to by other people because they might get something out of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's too much effort to go through and do all that.
Well, and I don't believe that one misstep or one disagreement or one, you know, certain thing can truly define someone's overall character, because people can change, people can learn from their mistakes. And sometimes when we are operating in stress or fight or flight, we operate in a different way than what is in line with our true values. So I think you're absolutely right with how you're doing that. You know, not that my opinion matters, but
you know, it's also though is every one of us has a frustration in life that allowed us to launch our business. Mm. You know, when I launched Unspock Media, that big frustration was dealing with newspapers and coupon magazines and radio that didn't understand marketing, that only were there to take my money. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. I got to learn the secrets that are going to attract the right clients and not just shotgun my marketing out there. And that's what created my marketing company. And from that point on, you know, then people would gravitate towards, hey, Rob, help us with our copywriting, help us with our books, help us with this. And, you know, to me, and for you, the frustration of seeing all those people every day in horrific situations, it got to you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about seeking something simpler. It was about seeking something that brought more joy to your heart.
Yeah, for sure. You know? Well, there were some moments of joy, by the way. I've delivered 2 babies.
Wow.
On the ambulance. That was wild. And then I got awards for, you know, if someone like clinically died, right? Like their heart stopped, they stopped breathing, class one, and then survived to walk out of the hospital. I've gotten two awards for that too. And those are happy moments for sure that I try to hold on to those more than the crap. But for sure, I was seeking something that was a little less emotionally heavy. But I will tell you, the emotional weight of carrying a business of, you know, I've been providing for my family for so long, and the weight of that is a lot. It's a lot. And having to show up on camera and show up on the internet and you do my song and dance to get clients. Oh man.
You know, and it's funny because I was, you know, looking at some of my siblings and what they've gone through, and you know, and I've been an entrepreneur my whole life, and they've worked for companies, and they've amassed, you know, 401ks, and they've amassed all these things that I couldn't have done being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, I look back and I'm thinking, well, I raised six kids, I've been married, I've had a nice house. So everything that we do as an entrepreneur maybe doesn't compare to people that have a job, but we have freedom. We can do what we want, when we want, how we want, and we're not at the mercy of someone's time clock.
Yeah.
So there's a trade-off. And sometimes being an entrepreneur is not the be-all, end-all that people think it is, where they think, oh, you're an entrepreneur, you're making money. I struggled with making money for like years, having a cleaning business until I figured out marketing. And so, you know, sometimes it's not about the money. It's about how do we structure our business that funds our personal life instead of our personal life becoming a slave to the business that we created.
Right.
You know, and for you, you've created this dynamic where you're not on call working 60, 70, 80 hours a week. Now you can do what you want.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, but you're also doing other sideline stuff. Like I mentioned about your wedding and your other stuff that you're doing, that's more of fun.
Is some of my hobbies for sure. So I'm a gym rat. I go to the gym 6 days a week. I do some modeling on the side, which is like that kind of fell in my lap. It's fun. And then I'm a singer. So I've been a worship leader at church for 6 years. I'm currently on sabbatical from that, but just needed to take a break in this season of life. But I built my website yesterday in 20 minutes with vibe coding, of course. And I'm putting it out there that, you know, you can hire me for your weddings or special events. And I made that post of like, hey, if I've ever done this, can you write a testimonial for me? And I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot I sang at your wedding. Oh my gosh, I forgot I sang at your wedding. And I forgot that like my dad and my stepmom literally paid for me to go to a studio and record an album for them to go get married in Jamaica and have my music put on their wedding, like on their wedding ceremony and in their wedding video. And I was like, I forgot about that. And then one of my best friends from elementary school, she messaged me her testimonial and I was blown away. She's an amazing writer, but, it took me right back to that moment where I was singing, At Last by Etta James to a live, jazz trio, in this huge auditorium. We were on the stage and it was just the most beautiful moment. And I was like, I did that. What? It's so fun.
Well,
so.
And I want the audience to understand that, you know, listen to Jody's increase in pitch when she's talking about her hobbies. She's excited, you know, and that's a new passion. And I think every entrepreneur needs a hobby outside of their main business, whether it makes you money or not. You know, something that gives you excitement. For me, I mean, I created this whole publishing empire on a sideline because of my, you know, my marketing business. And so in 13 years, we've produced 70 books. You know, so it's you're doing singing, you're doing all kinds of things, and for you, you're an entertainer. You know,
yeah.
You love being out there in front of people.
I'm really good at entertaining my kids too.
Yeah, and it's you know, I see it in what you're doing. I see it in the pictures that you're posting, and you know, but let's talk about Facebook for a second. You know, you've been teaching people how to run ads, but
yeah,
the platform itself seems to be imploding. Are ads as good as they used to be? I mean, is the result?
Oh, for sure. We're still seeing great results with our clients. I mean, I have some clients that have been on my roster for, you know, 3-4 years, and you know, here's the difference between clients with ads that work and clients with ads that don't. Is the clients with ads that work understand that it's not just ads. It's a whole ecosystem. It's ads are going to the funnel. Is the funnel working? Is this funnel the one that we need to talk to our ideal people that are going to eventually enroll in this higher ticket thing? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not. Let's make a new entry point. Let's make this entry point. And then we're testing ads to all these different funnels. And it's like this whole ecosystem. Those are the clients. Where ads work. They've been with me for years, and we're constantly iterating. We're constantly coming up with a new front end something, or going back to something and like, hey, you know, this was working, but then it stopped. So why did it stop working? How can we get it to work again? And then looking at attributions and like, okay, the first touch was this, and then it takes them 30, 60, 90 days, and then this happens, and then they sign up for a call, and then they buy our high ticket thing. Great. How can we make that timeline shorter? Mm-hmm. How can we actually like intentionally set that journey so they don't need that whole 90 days? We can just like do this, bam, high ticket sale. And so those are the clients that I work the best with, is the ones that they have a high risk tolerance. They've got a great budget. They understand that it's not just ads. It's a whole ecosystem, and you have to know how to convert things on the back end. The people that just want to use ads to like bring in visibility, bring in traffic, and the agencies that do that without understanding the full stack of marketing, that's not for me. I don't play that game anymore. I started out there, and I was like, well, we're bringing in new leads at $3 a lead. I don't know why you can't sell them. Mm-hmm. But I care too much. It's back to that caring about people thing. I was like, well, why can't they sell them? What's happening? Oh, here's what the data is telling us. Let's figure that out. Let's curate this intentional customer journey and get these people to sign up for your high ticket thing. So
back to ads are still working. She loves to talk about it.
I do. I'm so passionate about it. Honestly, I really have... I like to, not in a mean way, but I really do like to throw rocks at the people that run ads like that, where they're like, I'm getting you cheap leads. I'm like, yeah, you're just a baby. Yeah. That's not how it works.
I think sometimes that's how we feel as an entrepreneur. Not that we're excited about something, not that we can help somebody, not that, you know, we're making money at a certain point. We get depressed sometimes. About the people that are wasting our time.
Yes.
You know, and for me, you know, that's what the whole Rob versus series of books that I wrote was, is just the giant time wasters, the scammers, the spammers, the lousy customer service. You know, it's like, I can either be mad at all this crap, or I can write it down and use it to entertain people. And, you know, it got people through COVID. People were laughing. They're like, Rob, I love these books. For you, the same thing. You know, you've taken, you know, things that maybe don't drive you the right way, but you channeled them into singing and modeling and doing all this stuff that gives you, you know, excitement and it helps other people.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, this is one of the reasons I get people like you on the show, is because you're not just a typical entrepreneur running a brick and mortar. You're doing all these things, you know, And that, to me, is the $1 million standard. You're enabling people to create a business that allows them to do other things.
Yeah.
You know, without being anchored down into something that just, you know, drives them nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I also recently got into EDM music, like EDM. Drum and bass, and went to my first, I don't know, what do you call it? Concert? Rave? On Valentine's Day. And I went to one other one since then, and then have some other things planned. And it's a whole other world. It was so fun and so freeing, and like meeting all these other people. I don't know. It was incredible. This season of life, I've been just exploring and discovering and having fun. I have a trip coming up. In June, I think it is. I'm going foraging, camping, foraging. Like rustic camping and foraging. Like literally you find your food in the forest. You want to eat, you got to go pick it up off the ground.
You better have a cheesesteak somewhere.
Well, they're providing breakfast and dinner with the things that we're foraging, but they're going to add the protein in from like local farms and stuff like that. But it's like tent camping with a lake and a porta-john, which is so outside of my comfort zone. But I'm going with a friend, and it sounded really fun. So,
and you know, I'll probably think be
disgusting and sweaty for an entire weekend.
Ugh. We need to do things that are outside of our comfort zone to say, well, yeah, either I didn't like it or it's going to allow us to grow.
Yep, for sure.
But how do people find you? Where do they go?
The best place to find me is on Instagram. It's Jody_Sedini on Instagram, or on YouTube. You can look up my podcast, which is Jody Sedini, but it's the $1 million standard. Those are really great places to see me, find out more about who I am. My website is under construction, but it's SediniMarketing.com. If you want to go there and check things out there too. So.
Well, this is great. And everybody, please visit her everywhere, Instagram, on her website. And you know, if you're in the local area, you know.
I'm in West Michigan. I'm in the Mitten on the Lake Michigan side. So, yeah.
Well, this was fun, everybody. And we'll see you guys on the next episode. Adios.
Thank you.